But I don't know what to do with those tossed salads and scrambled eggs.
And you know what? When you hit Frasier and anything, it's going to be better.
No! Better. No, I
you have called me out, sir. I slap you across the face with love.
I rise to your challenge, sir. Kelsey Grammer was awesome.
Yeah, he was.
Kelsey Grammer was everything that you would expect out of Beast.
Definitely.
You know, he was fantastic.
These days, the comic book owns pop culture. Literature, movies, television, even music. You'll find it all in the panel of your favorite comic book. Us, we're living the comic's life. We're breaking the panel.
Welcome to Breaking the Panel, where we are your weekly download for all things that are awesome in comic book form. We cover everything from the backbends to the big screens. We bring you some news, but we really bring you that bro content, along with some females as well. We just like to have fun and hang out, and we're kind of playing at this today. So I am the Rock God of Podcasting, Charles McFall. My gaming handle has always been Tavasheroth. Coming to you live right now is none other than Mortal Sword, Paul Klotz.
Yeah.
And this is a cool one. I like this one. Chrisius Caesar, Chris Wisdom.
Come, McFall. Kneel before your Caesar.
You would like that, wouldn't you, Chris?
Yeah, you would.
You Charles might like that, too. I don't know anything about it.
He seems like a salty, sweet kind of guy.
I might kneel down so that Travis can launch off my back with a flying through the air haymaker. And that would be awesome. All right. Well, you know what? We like to start off the show with some emails, but you know what we don't have this week? Any emails. Why are you guys, you no love us no more. We charge you $5. $5, no love us.
Wow, that's not.
That was bad. Let's. I apologize for all the mad TV that I watched growing up that influenced me to do horrible, horrible accents.
I apologize for that, too. I mean, when in Living Color, Saturday Night Live, and Mad TV is what you
right?
on. Well, I don't. Sorry.
See, I can go the American route. It's not my fault. I didn't do it. Yeah, he looked like a man. They actually kind of brought that into Wonder Woman, which I loved. He looked like a man. Anyway, yeah, and it's a very bad stereotype when we do apologize. But yeah, we'd love to get your emails. BTP@giantsizeteamup.com. That's B as in breaking, T as in the, P as in panel at giantsizeteamup.com. You can go to our website, giantsizeteamup.com/breakingthepanel. There's a speak pipe there as well that we'd love to hear from you. And actually, there's a speak pipe from Super Stewie, but I assumed it was from Marvel or for MAA and FTH, so I didn't listen. So apologize, Stewie. If it is for this show, it'll be on next week. But let's start off with one that the missing Brian Ibbett has sent in. Now, here's some news. Starting next week, Brian Ibbett will be back here full time. He's going to be here every week, and it's going to bring some magic to the show. We're going to have a lot of fun with that. But he suggested this deleted mall scene shows X-Men Apocalypse could have been so much better. And just on the surface, I read this and go, first thing I actually think about is the Night of the Living Dead. Or not the night. It went
Day of the Dead. Or Dawn of the Dead. Dawn of the Dead.
Yeah, Dawn of the Dead.
Dawn of the Dead. It's one of the deads. And then the other thing I think of is Mallrats. Mm-hmm. And I'm thinking, X-Men Mallrats, I would watch the crap out of that. Right? If you click on this link, this is from IO9 on Gizmodo. It runs the clip, right, automatically. It's just a loop of the characters kind of walking through a mall. I think we got Rickrolled a little bit by Brian Ibbett on this.
It's the site is doing it. There is it's in the extra features, but I know on YouTube it's there. It's good. I don't know. It's Safety Dance is the song that's going on in the background of this whole scene.
Okay.
The scene's okay. I like it just as a little addition, extra scene. I don't feel like it adds anything at all to the movie. It's a neat scene, but I don't think it had a place.
But
I don't know.
But do you think it would have taken anything away from being in the movie? Because
watching the scene, it's very. I don't know that it would have taken anything.
Because I think the argument is that there really wasn't much to the movie, anyways, right?
Yeah.
And I haven't actually seen it yet, so that kind of says something about the film that usually I'm really on top of seeing these things. And
I mean, we talked about it a little bit when it first came out, and
right.
did we do a panel show for that one? I think we did, didn't we?
No, we didn't.
Oh, no
we didn't because nobody went to see it but you.
Yeah. Right. It, you know, the whole thing is, it's just that it was lacking. I measured it and I found it wanting. I think like a lot of people wanted to see it have a little bit of a lighter tone, especially when we were told that this was going to be like, oh, this is going to be 80s X-Men and Jubilee's in it and blah, blah, blah. And it's like, so we were expecting some fun, and there's not very much fun in that entire movie. I mean, every article I've read in reference to this topic is they've been mentioning the fact that aside from the Sweet Dreams montage of Quicksilver, that like the movie was really lacking anything that would make it fun.
Fun?
Yeah. And I mean, there's some quips here and there for sure.
That's where I find it jarring, because a bleak harvest and then all of a sudden there's this great big spike of fun that's just almost saccharine sweet too much. So it's very out of place, I guess would be. I mean, like I said, it's good as a little bonus deal. Like this, it's almost to the point where it's like a Saturday Night Live sketch.
Now, would this have been at the beginning of the movie or the end of the movie? If it were in the film,
it'd have to be at the beginning of the
That's movie. What I was thinking. I could see that the fun at the beginning, uh-huh. And you're like, oh, this is fun. Then all of a sudden, it's not fun. It makes the not fun stronger and stand out.
Yeah,
more.
That's some act one stuff right there. It's
yeah, okay.
Yeah. I mean, chronologically in the film, the way it was presented, it would have been like at the basically the
No. But I'm saying, where it would be in a film where it should.
I think it would have fit fine if it had gone where it was supposed to go. Honestly, I haven't seen the full clip yet, but I have read a synopsis of it, and I do think it would have been fine because they kind of already did what the clip was going to do. They did it in short form, though. You know what I mean? They took them out of the main story for a little bit and showed them being what they are, which is teenagers, you know, kids. And right. I think,
by the way, the makeup on Nightcrawler is not great on this.
You like your scarred?
I'm just saying it looks. I don't know. It doesn't look good. And I haven't seen it in action. I've seen a still photo of like,
yeah.
That looks like some trauma level stuff right there.
There's a scene where you get a good shot of his feet, and that's exactly what it looks like. It looks like he's wearing rubber booties.
Okay.
But, I mean, that's also, I don't know how finished of production that is.
Right. Now, I am counting. That's why I said I haven't seen the film, and maybe in the film it looks better.
He does look better through most of the film, but honestly, my big complaint has been some of the costuming. Like, Beast looks comical. I mean, he looks like Harry from Harry and the Hendersons.
Harry and the Hendersons.
You know, oh, I mean, no. Like, he doesn't look good at all. Like, you want to talk about nabbing that 80s look? It looks like that film was produced in the 80s. Like, it's bad. Like, he's never looked good. He looked bad in First Class. He's looked bad in everything since.
So you're saying that Brett Ratner did that better?
And you know what? When you hit Frasier and anything, it's going to be better. Slightly. Just slightly.
No!
Better.
No, you have called me out, sir. I slap you across the face with the glove. I rise to your challenge, sir. Kelsey Grammer was awesome.
Yeah, he was.
Kelsey Grammer was everything that you would expect out of Beast. You know,
Beast,
I mean,
exactly.
He's well spoken. He's, you know, a larger gentleman, not like, you know, tubby large, but like a slightly more imposing size.
Physically, yeah.
You know. He's broad-chested.
The dry wit.
Yeah, and the dry wit. Yeah. He was fantastic.
Yeah. And you could believe he could be violent, and that was what's also...
Yeah, it was really unfortunate that version of Beast was the one that ended up in the worst film. You know, like, I mean, it was... I would take that Beast all day. You know what I mean? Like, and I like the gentleman who's playing Beast right now. Nick Holt is awesome. He's doing really good work, and I like him as Hank. But, you know, that's a whole nother thing, too. Like, why are we playing this version of Beast where he turns into where he hulks out?
Right. Yeah, he's not a werewolf.
Right. And he's never in any of the books I've read, he's never been portrayed that way. Classically, back in the day, he wasn't necessarily, you know what I mean? Like, he wasn't necessarily the guy that that we see today with the blue fur and everything. He looked more humanoid back in the day. But you know what I mean? Like, it's never been like a Jekyll Hyde thing. So I don't know why they chose to go that direction. Is it because Nick Holt doesn't want to wear a costume all the time? I don't know.
Maybe it was just a decision to bring the humanity of him out and by showing him out. I don't know either.
That's so core to the character of Beast. His name is Beast for a reason. It's because it's about the fact that he has humanity despite looking bestial. You know what I mean?
Now all I can hear is that the song Creep, except I'm a beast. I'm a weirdo. What the hell am I doing? Anyway, so now here's the thing that they bring out in the article that I did not realize, because obviously I haven't seen it. Jubilee, I know, is in the film, right? But they didn't leave her powers in any of the cuts?
Nope. They never showed her
Why
powers
is she in the film?
Well, that's the thing. That's...
Fan service at that point.
Fan service that was not served.
Or I'm not trying to be blatantly ugly, but is it really them trying to maybe cater to say, look, we have an Asian?
I think it's one of the most requested characters for a while.
Yeah, well, there's that. And, okay, so that's the thing is like there's all this argument of whitewashing in the industry, right? And they have a film with an Asian character, and then they cut all of her scenes. What?
But she physically shows up. You just don't see her do anything, right?
Right. She has like two lines of dialogue in the whole film, and she doesn't do anything. She doesn't add anything to the story. She's the very definition of a token minority, and that is offensive. Like, I'm sorry, guys. That's offensive. That's what we're talking about. I mean, I don't know.
But Olivia Munn's in the movie as well, and she has a more substantial role. So to me,
not by much. I mean, let's be real here. I mean, that's one of the other problems is Olivia Munn was in the movie, but her character was butchered.
Right.
Oh, no.
You know, I mean, Psylocke is supposed to be a English woman trapped in a Japanese body, right?
Right.
And I don't know. I didn't know that about her.
And she's supposed to have a certain set of powers. And in this film, she was not any of those things and did not have those powers that she's supposed to have. And I'm just like, who is this character? Because it's not Psylocke.
Wait, she didn't have her psychic powers?
She did, but they were completely different from what they've been in the comic books the whole time.
And she was Olivia Munn, though.
What's that, Chris?
She was Olivia Munn, though. For me, that makes up for quite a bit.
I'm sorry. If she had said Martha, would you have taken that?
I will take anything that Olivia Munn will give me.
I think Aaron Rodgers might have some words to say to you, sir.
I was just gonna say, and according to certain tweets that we've seen between her and Aaron Rodgers, that quite a lot is what she will give.
Woo!
Yeah, you see, it's getting hot in here.
I'm just saying she's not shy. She's not shy.
No, neither does she need to be. Nope. So, I mean, I was excited to see that she was cast as Psylocke. I was excited to see Psylocke was in the film. Mm-hmm. I was excited to see that fist come at somebody and the pink blade come out of it.
Right.
Psychic, you know, the psychic blade.
And then I was disgusted when a whip came out of her hand because that made no sense.
But offline, I have shown you that there is precedence for that in the comics.
Not really, though.
Well, talk about it here, because you didn't talk about it here.
Like once, right? And not hundreds of times like the blade does.
Right, but there's precedence for it to be there, so that's the power he chose to show. I mean, for me, mm-hmm. especially when you start talking, God, why can I not think of his name right now? The kid.
Billy?
No, pink Mohawk, for whatever reason, his name is escaping me right now. Quentin Quire. Quentin Quire has been one of those, I mean, he's an Omega-level telepath that has displayed his power set in ways previously unimagined. I mean, the dude makes shotguns, psychic shotguns.
Mm-hmm.
So, nice. I mean, Psylocke herself has precedence for doing the whip, but Quentin Quire has added a precedence to say that these psychic weapons can take any form, really.
Mm-hmm.
It's just a physical manifestation of it.
I don't think it's a widespread manifestation, though. But either way, I mean, would we say this was a middle-of-the-road movie at best?
Oh, yeah. I mean, it had some great moments, but it wasn't a great film. It definitely doesn't like add anything to the X-Men legacy, unfortunately. I enjoyed it, but I also hated parts of it. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
I mean, I think I had... See, walking out of the theater, I was like, I was overwhelmed a little bit by some of the spectacle, and I was okay with a lot of it. But then when I had time to ruminate on it, I was like, no, this was really disappointing. This was bad. And when you start reading articles, I mean, and that's one of the dangers of the internet, right? So we're presented with all this information, all these different critical takes, and you get to see all this stuff out there. But people do a really good job of tearing something down, man. Like when you read article after article where people are picking apart every detail and talking about how none of it adds up, it's hard to stay positive.
Yeah.
You know, it's like unless the film is exceptional, which like Force Awakens, for example, there were a lot of haters, not a ton of haters, not like some – you know, no BVS level hater. But there are a handful of haters out there who are like, oh, it's A New Hope. And they start picking things apart. And it's like, at the end of the day, we go, but it was a good movie. So whatever.
Yeah.
Like, I don't care. Yeah. I hear you and you're not wrong, but I don't care. But when a movie is subpar, when it's mediocre at best, that's when you start to be like, oh, man, they really did butcher this. Because, you know, we're talking about character assassination here. Storm wasn't presented the way she was supposed to be from the comic books. Angel / Archangel was not presented the way he was supposed to be. Psylocke, you know, Jubilee was horribly wasted. I don't even know why they made that poor girl wear that hideous outfit because she just didn't need to be there. They they were like, you know what? We don't care. We don't care about what X-Men means to so many people that are going to show up and watch this movie. We're going to present our take on it. And that's the thing that, you know, let's talk about this. I'm a little tired of production companies and producers and directors and writers saying like, well, we're going to make our own version of this thing. No. You bought and paid for an intellectual property so that you could present it on the TV or film screen. What? You're dying.
Sorry. Sorry, man. Sorry. I just, oh my God, how can you defend PBS and take this position?
I didn't defend PBS against your arguments. I said you were right, but I still enjoyed it. I've never said that you weren't wrong in the characterization.
And they followed some of that book to the T.
Which parts to the T?
The rolling of the credits. Now, look. Okay, Greg, we'll go back to your soapbox.
Well, I didn't mean to derail you, man.
But I will say this. I did get BVS on Blu-ray. I finally the other day got to sit down and watch the Ultimate Edition. And I want to say this. If you liked the movie or if you saw that there are problems with the movie, but it was okay, the Ultimate Edition is a way better film. However, if you're like Chris and didn't like the character development, that doesn't change and the Ultimate Edition won't matter to you. But as far as the story went, the Ultimate Edition is a way better movie. It makes sense. It's more of a spy thriller than the hack job that we got in the theaters. Mm-hmm. So if you liked it or you're, and that's what other people are saying too, but I'm just telling you from my personal experience, if you liked it or if you're middle ground, Ultimate Edition is the way to go. But if you definitely have problems like Chris does with the characters, it's not going to change. Mm-hmm. So go back to your rant about buying IPs and
you just kind of hinted at it there though too, is like we have two problems going on. We have people who are taking properties that they don't understand, or if they do understand them, they just lose all comprehension in the creative process of putting something on the screen, and they butcher it left and right. And the core fans are tired of that. I'm sorry, but we are. One of the great things about the MCU is almost every character that they've presented appropriately. They might not show the whole story. They might not dig into the back issues to really pull out all these details, but they show the character the way they're presented in the books. Almost without fail. There's been very few mischaracterization, in my opinion, in the MCU. Yeah. But then you look at Fantastic Four. You look at X-Men. You look at BVS. I mean, I'm right there with you. I argued that the Batman in BVS is not the Batman. That Batman's not supposed to be that guy. They did, even in that episode, in that panel episode when we talked about it, I said, that's not the Batman that Batman's supposed to be. I mean, at least not in a feature film when you're still setting up the story. If you want to go way down the road and show the broken, beaten, alternate world Batman, that's fine. But don't start a whole, you know, cinematic universe with it, because that doesn't make any sense. You know, that's not what people came to see. You know, so X-Men is a perfect example. Like the original X films, for as bad as they were, they presented those characters fairly. They presented those characters as they were in the books. Almost, you know, I don't remember any glaring like alterations that really bothered me. Maybe a couple of the villains were ham-fisted a bit to try to get them into the story, but it wasn't like they took core members of the team and just completely slaughtered their whole story. Because like Storm in this movie, they just ruined her. They ruined her completely. And they took these great characters. You know, they took Angel / Archangel. They took Storm. They took Psylocke. They made them horsemen, and they gave them zero impact on the actual story. They're there, and they're supposed to be, you know, badass, awesome, super mutants imbued with Apocalypse's power, and that's not what we got. Also, can we talk about the fact that we had a movie here where we kill off possibly the greatest villain in the X-Men universe? At least as we perceive it at the end of it, we've killed them off. Spoilers, guys. Sorry. What is with their obsession with throwing away their best characters?
I don't know. It
doesn't make any sense. Apocalypse is the big bad. He should be built up to like Thanos's being.
Yeah, I mean, absolutely.
MCU is handling this right. They're building up to the biggest bad.
Well,
by the time we get
there. I will say this about Apocalypse. He's been quote unquote killed before.
Well, sure.
And he comes back because he has a sleep / regeneration.
But it's you haven't seen the movie. Spoilers, guys, cover your ears. But it's pretty hard to come back from getting like annihilated by the Dark Phoenix. Sorry, I ruined that moment for you.
No, I mean you didn't. It's part of the conversation because it does lend to Why? Why are we getting rid of bad guys? Why the hell are we getting rid of good guys? Why'd Quicksilver have to die in the last Avengers movie? Mm-hmm. You know?
Because he's in the other movie and they're doing him better, is my honest. That's my honest feeling.
That shouldn't matter.
I know, but it's...
Because they're going to bring him back in Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. That's where Avengers go when they die.
No, I would take that. I would take that. Absolutely. I mean, yes, it's ham-fisted, but I would absolutely take a movie actor showing up on Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. as a recurring character. Yeah, I would take that.
Charles.
You have a fast person.
Yeah, well, the other thing is, you mentioned it, the editing room. Can we stop spending millions of dollars to film movies that we then destroy in an editing bay? Because that's what we keep hearing. X-Men Apocalypse. Oh, well, there was, you know, another 45 minutes of film that got cut. Why? Why? Why are you doing
that? And are they stretching? Are they stretching that number? Because we know you'll film 4 to 6 hours of a film, depending on what's going on. You're cut a lot of it. But so are they stretching that number of, is it actual real film that got cut, like story good stuff? Or is it just stuff we're not going to use?
Well, you know what it is they're sitting there and some studio executive is coming in and saying, well, you've got to keep it under 2 hours or right around two hours. Movies that go beyond 2 hours don't do well. And it's like, well, first of all, that's a lie. Because some of the greatest movies of all time have gone over 2 hours.
Lord of the Rings.
Right? Now, and here's the other thing. When we're talking about a comic book property, I mean, sure, if you're doing Ant-Man, I don't want a 3-hour epic. I'm with you.
Sure.
All right?
I'll give you that.
But when you're doing X-Men, I want like a 2.5-hour film. I want you to really invest. You know what I mean? I want to get some good story under this. You know what I mean? Or at least, you know, do it in such a way. If you want to do the Hobbit thing where you're going to take one movie and break it up into multiples, I mean, please don't do it into 3 movies where they get increasingly awful. Please. But like, you know, if you need to make 2 movies out of what you filmed, do it. I mean, I'm sure you can find a way to work it into your release schedule if you do a part 1 and a part 2. And you don't necessarily have to do the thing where you wait a whole year. You can wait a few months. Put a dent in Marvel's coffers by doing something like that. You know what I mean? Like, really hit them where it hurts and be like, oh, yeah, no, we're gonna do this whole thing. We're going to do it differently than everybody else is doing it. And we're going to get you twice. And maybe it blows up in your face. But at this point, isn't it anyways?
And here's my thing. Like, back in the day, intermissions used to be a pretty commonplace deal.
Mm-hmm.
So tell me, just from a marketing perspective, how cool it would be if you were doing, let's say, your Infinity War movie, and you made it a 3-hour movie with a 30-minute intermission, and that at that point you got the fans involved, and you said, costume contest, boom. And I mean, and more nowadays, you're seeing movie theaters are serving alcohol, they're serving actual food, not just concession food, but, you know, restaurant-style quality food. So you're putting time in the middle of the movie that you can go get those things.
Mm-hmm.
That's going to help your concession sales. That's what drives a lot of this. It's not that ticket prices aren't high because the ticker prices are high. It's because they're trying to get more money out of that than the lagging concession sales because ticket sales are down. And
well, it's a back and forth, too. A great portion of the ticket sales, if not all, I don't know the full ins and outs. They go to the company, like Warner Brothers in the case of BVS.
For the distribution, yeah.
Right, where concession and those kind of things goes to the theater.
Yeah, theater makes almost nothing off a ticket, unfortunately. Yeah.
Right. They make a little, but not a lot. And there's a lot of rules to go with it. But the idea is, people are going to come see Star Wars, so you might as well sell them some popcorn. And that's why it's $20 for popcorn and 2 drinks.
Yeah.
If you're lucky. I mean, that's what it is in my area. It's more expensive than other areas.
I mean, there's a whole conversation about the fact that the theater business is pricing its dwindling customer base out of even going. I mean, it's
getting absolutely. Yeah.
It shouldn't cost you $50+ to take 2 people or maybe even 3 people to go see a movie and get some popcorn and a drink, but it does.
Right.
And that's crazy.
But it does.
Well, and that's the thing too, is like in my area where we've got the movie theaters that have the dine and fork or whatever. When I can get a large popcorn and 2 large sodas for $20, but I can get a burger and fries for $10, you know, that's a beer is going to cost me maybe $5. Yeah. I'm spending a little bit more than I would on the popcorn or soda, but I'm getting real food.
Right.
So their concession prices are ridiculous.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And that's hurting the industry as well. But Chris, you talked about the intermission thing. You know, Hateful Eight was supposed to have an intermission, and some theaters did do it, but most of them didn't. That's the other problem, is most of these theaters, they're only interested in pushing as many showings as possible, Mm-hmm. You know, like put them in there, fill the seats, get them out, clean it up, get them in there, you know, and they're doing this whole like, you know, cattle farm style of approach. And it's like, Chris, you're tapping on something really important there. I mean, this is getting meta. This is getting outside of just the movies themselves. But it's like, maybe the whole industry needs to adjust the way they look at this stuff, because it's, you're getting crushed right now. Mm-hmm. Like, even though we're showing record movie ticket sales year over year, it's only those handful of movies. It's only your Star Wars. It's only your Marvel Cinematic Universe stuff. Everything else is getting destroyed. And that's why they're every time a big movie like that comes out, they're clamoring for those dollars. They're like, oh, well, we need them. We need them. We're starving, right?
Yeah.
It's because your whole business model is completely out of whack. It's not a value anymore. Not when I can go, when I can wait 6 months and go buy this DVD or Blu-ray, go home and watch it on my huge TV. Pause mm-hmm. it when I want to go to the bathroom. Pause it when I want to go make a 50-cent bag of popcorn and grab, you know, a 50-cent can of Coke out of the – or whatever your preferred beverage is out of the refrigerator. Sure. You know what I mean? That's the difference. I, you know, and movies are expensive. A Blu-ray when it first comes out is around $20, but you're already paying more than that for one viewing with two people and any of that stuff included. You know what I mean? You're paying
– Right. Now, I will argue that you're paying for an experience, because I noticed that when I watched BVS, was like, yeah, I've got a decent-sized TV. I've got decent surround sound. Like you said, pause. You know, the kids can run around. I have to have a babysitter. I can drink whatever I want, eat whatever I want. But the experience at the theater is, of course, IMAX is there. Mm-hmm. 3D is there if you're into 3D. But even just the standard 2D, which I typically go to, the screen is just – infinitely bigger sure. than my TV, and the sound is one, I mean, true surround sound, because they put the speakers all around you and it's coded for it. Mm-hmm. And so there's definitely an experience that you're paying for, but there's got to be a better,
but is that
better way?
Is that experience today any better than that experience was 10 years ago?
No.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, the DLP has been around only for like 8 years. So yeah.
The overall experience yeah. of going to see your movie in a theater.
Oh, okay. I see what you're saying.
Right. I'm with Chris on this. Like, because okay. you're going to get that on opening night of Star Wars. You're going to get that on opening night of a Marvel film. You're going to get the excited crowd. You're going to get the costumes, the people who are cheering, laughing, all that stuff. You go a couple days later and it's silence. You know what I mean?
Even which is kind of the way I prefer it.
Well, but even in a funny movie. Well, that's yeah. the point, though. If you prefer it that way, then wait and watch it at home. Why would you ever spend all that money and all that inconvenience to well, drag your family
you, around? Okay. You have a great point. So here's how it worked in my house before I got into all these shows about comics. You know, I mean, doing Breaking the Panel and all that jazz was two or three times a year. And that was it. Two or three times a year. Now, before we had kids, it was all during the summer. We'd go like every week. Cause it was something to do on a date or to get out mm-hmm. and have fun, whatever. But once we had kids, more expenses, yada, yada, yada. Two or three times a year, my wife and I go, we really need a date night. And there's limited ways we can go spend money and get an experience. We can go, one of our favorite things to do is Japanese food. Mm-hmm. That's for us about $60 to $80 for two people, because we do it once or twice a year. We go all out. Yeah. Same with the movies. We'd go, okay, we'll go and get our tickets or whatever, and we'll get the popcorn and drink. And it's an experience. It's just different than being at home and watching it. But that was limited. The only reason I go more now is because we do these massive roundtables that I head up. So I need to go see mm-hmm. Avengers, and I need to go see Doctor Strange, and go see what comes out, so that we can do our stuff. Now, it gives me more of a – there's a good experience there. When I go, I'm not worried about the crowd as much, but I do want to go early on in the week so I can be one of those kids in the know, right? Oh, I saw it opening weekend. I saw it over a holiday weekend. I saw it first week. So I saw it. But I choose to go on a Wednesday afternoon at 1 o'clock because I my wife and I both are – we hate smells. Okay, we're just going to diverge here for a second. Here's a PSA for everybody listening to the show. Axe body spray does not replace bath. Okay. Perfume does not come in gallon sizes. Truly. Stop it. And it's horrible to be in a crowd and go, okay, we've got some comfortable seats. We're okay. And have somebody sit in front of you or behind you or two rows over, and you get this headache because they smell like, you know, whatever Axe cologne, perfume, whatever they put on. And it kills me. So that's part of the reason I choose to go. If it weren't for that, or for people being rude, talking on their phones, and it's not rampant, but it still happens. Or somebody brings a two-year-old to see Avengers because they didn't want to get a babysitter. Right. And the kid's crying the whole time. That happens every once in a while. So I personally try to make my experience be what I want it to be, which is massive screen, massive sound. I feel like the movie's moving me, you know, because it sounds loud enough in this. And I overpay for popcorn and a drink. And I tell you, we abused the refills. I mean, we tag team, you know, it's your turn, go get a refill. And, we definitely do that for sure. But other than that, honestly, if it weren't for me being on Breaking the Panel and heading up the GSTU, I would, there are some, I missed X-Men. Mm-hmm. Avengers I would have seen, BVS, I don't know. You know, right. I might have waited. Suicide Squad, I would have waited because it looked like a cool film, but not like I got to go see it right now. So that's your, how do they change that experience? I don't know.
That's the thing though. Like when I was growing up, like I think of, do you guys remember Last Action Hero?
Yep.
Yes.
All right. That movie is about movies, right? And it shows this kid going to this kind of rundown old school theater. And it really exemplifies the whole thing that like kids and teenagers and even young adults are going to go to the theater on a Tuesday at 4 o'clock kind of thing. They're going to go when they get out of school. They're going to go on at random times. And that is just not a reality anymore, I don't think, especially not with the way the industry is now. They don't make that a thing that's reasonable.
I agree with you because especially with under 18, the society has changed. Problems have happened. There are a lot of theaters that have rules that at a certain time, if you don't have an adult, period, right. It doesn't matter what the rating is, you're not getting
Sure, there's that too.
Kids loiter and they make problems.
Well, they're vulnerable to, you know, victimization and all that kind of stuff.
That's true. Yeah,
absolutely.
That's true.
But like the thing, my point is though, because like when I was growing, I remember going to see the 3 Star Wars movies when they were remastered. You know, the special
in the 90s.
In the 90s, yep. Yeah. And I was in school. I was in junior high. And we went and saw them on opening day for each one at the first showing that was available to us in our little podunk town. You know what I mean? And it was like, because it was a matinee, it was like $5, maybe $6 to go see the movie. You know what I mean?
Yes.
And we did the whole thing. It was like we'd get the popcorn and the soda, or we'd go get lunch right before in the food court of the mall that it was in. And then we'd go. And then we'd have like – my parents could give me a $20 bill, maybe $25, and I could go see that movie. I could get lunch, maybe even get a drink or something in the movie, and then still have money for the arcade afterwards. And that was what it used to be like. And it's not like that anymore. And I understand that, you know, the industry has to adapt to a certain degree, but they're not making it approachable for people. And, you know, I think that's a huge issue. I think that, and that is why the industry is suffering, is because people can't just casually go see movies. Cause like when somebody says they're going to go see a movie, like, you know, you talk about like somebody asking somebody out and being like, hey, you want to go catch a dinner and a movie with me? And it's like, whoa, Daddy Warbucks, calm down. You might as well just buy her the ring. I mean, so are you going to have to take a loan out for that? Cause like, you know what I mean? Cause it's crazy. Yeah. It's getting out of control. And I really feel like an industry like that is arguably failing is undermining itself by not adapting and kind of retrograding a little bit into habits that used to make people come to the theater all the time. I have a close friend of mine. He would go, he was always off on Mondays because he worked a weird schedule, but he would go catch the matinee every Monday. He'd go watch at least one movie every week religiously. And then if there was a really exceptional film out, he'd go see it on like the Friday when it came out or the Thursday or whatever. But for the most part, he'd go see something every Monday. And even nowadays, he's somebody who's like a big fan of film and he doesn't do it. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm. Yes. Yeah. Yeah.
You know, I mean, it gets out of control. And I used to go with him all the time. And then after a while, I was like, dude, I can't keep paying $10 to go see whatever garbage film seems like it might be good. Cause a lot of them are just that. They're just garbage, you know?
Yeah.
But that's the thing. And that's where the indie films really suffer because nobody just really gets to casually catch them. That's when the not blockbuster films suffer a lot. That's when your run of the mill comedies. I mean, there's a place in the world for run of the mill comedies. Not everything is going to be, you know, the next Bridesmaids, you know what I mean? Where it's just going to crush sales. There's going to be a lot of like, what was that horrible movie with Jimmy Fallon? And, you know, and never mind. It doesn't matter. Yeah. You know, like there's a bunch of bad comedies out there that are still a good time and are still worth a couple bucks to go have a laugh, get out of the house kind of thing. But the industry is making it so those can't thrive anymore and they're not making it any better. And then when these big blockbusters are now screwing it up too, because they're trying to chop these films down into something that just, I don't know, man.
Used to, you could make a film and it'd stand or it rise or fall on its own merits. But now you have to make a film in order to make an X amount of money
back.
And you need to make a film that is going to catch headlines. That's the other problem.
Yeah.
Is it has to appeal to, you know, a topic that we've kind of brushed on a few times before. I know it's one you're passionate about, Charles, is, you know, whether Metacritic sites like Metacritic or Rotten Tomatoes, like, are they doing good or are they doing bad for the industry? Are they hurting us or are they helping us? And it's, as a consumer, on one hand, I'm like, well, this movie's got a 56% on Rotten Tomatoes. I guess it's not worth going. And it might be a good film, but, you know, it's still bombing on an aggregate site. And so I'm probably not going to go see it.
And we're going to talk about that next week.
It's also giving it a crap ton of headlines.
Oh, yeah, sure.
But so for me, two things. First, Paul, love you to death, but you need to stop throwing words like podunk little town when you also say matinee and the food court of the mall. I grew up in a town of 4,000 people and we had neither one of those things. True podunk. Charles, I believe you had a similar experience.
Yeah, I definitely had the mall was an hour away.
To be fair, I grew up in a small farming town, but half an hour away was a city of about 40,000 people where we had one mall with one movie Same theater here. For my entire yeah. childhood. Yeah. We didn't get stadium seating until the early 2000s.
But I digress. But no, okay, so to me, part of the culpability is not just, it definitely on the studios and the films, but on the theaters themselves, and we're not just talking concession prices. They have to figure out innovative ways to get people, get butts in those seats. In Chicago, there's and I think in Texas, I want to say there's four of these theaters. It's called a 4D theater. You watch the movie, the seats all have speakers in them. They have rumbles in them. They release scents. They'll release smoke. I believe it'll mist.
Charles would hate that.
I probably.
But, well, you know, if it's a short experience, it's okay. But yeah. We have one for a special experience at a park called Stone Mountain here. But yeah, for a 2-hour movie, no, thank you.
But you know, to me, and they're charging what, between $20 and $30 a ticket for that. And to me, that's an experience that I'd be willing to pay for. But it reminds me of an old John Goodman movie from the '90s, Matinee. And he was a producer director of those old 50s B movies, and he would go into these theaters beforehand and make them just horribly terrifying for people because he would add buzzers to the seats. He'd be in there a week before his movie premiered, adding buzzers to seats and people in costumes coming through. And I'm not saying that you have to go that schlocky, but at the same time, you know, do something like an intermission and allow, you know, a costume contest or something similar. You know what I mean?
Well, you know, something that you're talking about paying for experience, something that England does, or at least specific theaters in England, is they have premiere seating. So you pay your, and talk about matinee, Klotz, these two things go together. I can still, my favorite chain is AMC because they treat me well as a customer. I'm a part of their club. Mm-hmm. I'm actually now part of their premier club since they changed it. And I've been in it since day one. I get bumped up into the new level and it gives me perks. It gives me free popcorn. It gives me free upgrades. It every so much money I spend there, I get $10 rewards that can get me popcorn or a ticket or whatever. So it's a great rewards program. I really like the chain. But they do a matinee, and it's different prices across the country. And that's the other thing that kind of is irritating is you go to Chicago, which I did, and the matinee there is like $8. Well, you come to Atlanta, it's $5. So it's a huge difference. And I'm not a huge difference, but proportionally it's huge.
Well, yeah, your matinee price in a major city is going to be different. You know, there's different costs involved with the business and everything. I expect that to a certain degree.
But that's fine. But so here, I could pay $5 for a matinee. Now, premier seating would say you can also pay for $2. You pick your seats. And there's less seats in the theater because they make them larger, more comfier. Like you're saying, it's kind of like stadium. It's really comfortable. They have fold-out trays and whatnot. But you don't pay $5 again. You pay like $8 or $9 for a ticket. Then it's come as you are, or if you pay the extra $2, you pick exactly where you want to sit, it's reserved for you, and you go in and sit exactly where you want to sit for the movie. And I think that's something that would boost theater profits without being a huge chunk of change out of my pocket. Anyway, sorry, I killed that one. We spent a lot of time on this, so let's get on to other stuff because we'll go on.
But I got
days
more. No, I'm kidding.
No, yeah.
I know you do. I know you do. But we've talked about you're blowing things up. We've talked about Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. The new live-action Marvel Ghost Rider has been revealed for Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. We'll have the picture. We'll have the article with the picture linked to our site. The car looks awesome. I'm not entirely sure about the skull. Live-action skulls are so hard to do, in my opinion, that the CGI here is kind of cool, but kind of not. What do you guys think?
I think it's a little bendy. It definitely looks out of place on the photo, but we'll see when it gets
on
to final
photo. Yeah,
when it gets to final production. But we've seen that a few times in Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. where they want to do great things with the effects, and they do what they can within their budget constraints. And it's definitely not Walker Texas Ranger-ish, but it's definitely not it's not big budget movie either. You know, so, but you can't expect big budget movie when you're on ABC.
Well, that's the problem, right? We kind of expect big budget with the name Marvel on it, but yet it's a TV show.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. You know, you're right. You're right about that.
Well, that's something that's been discussed a little bit here and there, is that it's very much, even though it has the Marvel stamp on it, it's not treated as a Marvel property. It's treated as like an ABC television show property. Mm-hmm. I know Chloe Bennett, who plays Sky/Daisy. She has commented that like everybody else in the MCU just pretends like they don't exist.
Yeah.
Like there's no, you know, they just see it as this, oh, it's kind of like this advertising vehicle for the rest of the MCU. And it's kind of unfortunate. It's like, that's not the way to do this. That was not what was promised from the beginning. And sadly, that is what has been delivered, though. It definitely doesn't feel like it's part of the rest of the world at large, other than a few casual references.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think I heard it on DC on Screen. The way they phrased it was it's a unidirectional, right? The movies don't really reference the shows, but the shows all reference the movies.
Right.
So it's kind of an inclusive universe, but it's not.
Right.
You know, and I'm with you. I want to see it go bi-directional. I want just a nod, just something, a headline that says, you know, Devil of Hell's Kitchen, blah, blah, blah. You know, sitting there on the table when Tony Stark is talking about something. Just something,
well,
right?
That's the problem, is that's all they get. Yeah. And I mean,
they don't even get that.
There was an article just yesterday with the Russo brothers that they talked about that specifically, about whether or not the Netflix guys would have any kind of interaction in Infinity War. And they're like, well, we don't want to say yes or no, but the allusion came to, that's possibly what it's going to be, is a passing headline or a ticker on a news program in the background. And I don't want that. Like, if you want to do that, at least show me. You don't have to give him any lines. It doesn't even have to be Charlie Cox. Give me a stunt double in a Daredevil costume, saving somebody from certain harm, because there's stuff going on in Hell's Kitchen, just like there is in the whole world, because Thanos is here.
See, I'm not happy with that. I want it all. You know what I mean?
Well, like, yeah.
Well, absolutely. I mean, but the problem is, like, they really are just like I've read a couple articles here, and they're all basically saying they don't take it seriously. They don't treat the TV shows as serious as part of the world at large. Like, the people who are on those shows, they're trying to be like, oh yeah, we're all part of the MCU, and everybody else is just kind of like, no, you're not, kind of thing. Like, they're not just like saying that per se, but the implication that there's like, because Chloe Bennett was in one of the interviews, they asked if, you know, oh, do you guys talk to any of the people in any of the movies or anything? They're like, no, we work on TV shows, they work on movies, you know what I mean? Like that.
Yeah.
And I think that's part of the problem, is it's like, that's the attitude, is that, you know, we've got a bunch of TV stars and then we got a bunch of movie stars. And it's like,
I wonder how much that has to do with the studio not having confidence in the television properties, and not because of the properties themselves, but because of the nature of television. And well, how your show can be awesome, but it doesn't mean it's going to get renewed. Right. Exactly.
Well, I've heard a lame excuse along those lines, because it's a little bit of a valid argument, but, oh yeah, well, it takes 2, 3, 4 years to make a movie. And, you know, in that time, all this stuff changes in the TV shows. But you're like the Inhumans thing, man. That was 100% handcuffed to Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. because an Inhumans movie was coming. Oh, but we got Spider-Man back, so let's change the whole movie schedule. And now we just gave the middle finger to the show, because that whole last season was weak sauce, because we were dealing with something that was supposed to lead to a movie that isn't now.
Yeah.
And now they're kind of left hanging in the wind. And on top of that, let's look at this. Netflix will cross over with each other. The movies obviously do what the movies do. Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. is left out as a redheaded stepchild.
Yeah. Yeah. Oh, yeah. It's out in the cold. Yeah. It's not all that different than how Supergirl was until the change. Mm-hmm. You know right. what I mean? And
well, even Supergirl got the Flash for a minute.
Yeah.
Well, but that was a big step. Yeah. I mean, and that was largely because it's technically a Berlanti show. You know what I mean? Now that's right. fixed. Now they're together again. You know what I mean? They're all on the same network now, which is probably better for it in the long run. But I honestly think that, you know, Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. isn't going to last, man. I don't want to be the doomsayer here and try to call it before it's coded. But like, I really feel like this might be the last season at best. Because
I wish you would go to Netflix. Here's the thing. Here's how you make a TV show last. You cater to an audience who doesn't want to do anything. And as negative as that might sound, I'm serious. You're catering to the older adults who would just rather sit down and turn on their TV at night and watch 7 years of Bones and watch what 10 years.
You, of NCIS. You mean a show that you and could like tune Bones. In at any time and not know any, you know, what season it is and yeah, not care.
Exactly. Yeah. Exactly. That's exactly what I'm talking about. It is watered down because it caters to a mass audience, and it's an audience who doesn't have to think about, and they don't have to keep connectivity. Whereas we as the geeks, we need this connectivity to matter in these shows. So when you water it down, if you water down Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. to the point that anybody can watch, the ones that matter us are not going to watch anymore because it doesn't make a point. I liked Bones. Don't get me wrong. I watched it for a number of years, but it got repetitive. And again, it's like, didn't we kind of cover this in like season 3? Didn't it? And I realized it became pedantic. It became, oh, now you're catering yeah. to the CBS people, which I'm sorry, CBS people is a bunch of old farts who don't want to do anything, but they'll spend their money. And that's how NCIS is still. Are you kidding me? NCIS has not broken new ground since the premiere of the show, and it is still on, and people still love it. You're wrong.
Don't you dare talk bad about Mark Harmon. Don't you ever talk.
I didn't say he was bad.
About Leroy Jethro Gibbs. You take it back. Take it back now.
All right. You know what? We'll go on and on about this too. But here's what is awesome. Here's something that's awesome. You know what's coming. Loot Crate, man. Get it in your box. I just want my rug back, dude. Loot Crate might bring you the dude's rug at some point. God, if they make a Big Lebowski box, I am all over that. You hear me, Loot Crate?
Yeah.
They do those $50 one-time boxes. I would do that in a heartbeat. Big Lebowski, make it happen. But this month is not a Big Lebowski. It is Speed. So, you know, we've always talked about it, right? We've made fun of it. Gone in 60 seconds. We're going to top the list with that one. CW Flash, Battlestar Galactica, all kind of awesome stuff. It is coming to your mailbox, but only if you get in now. You've got just a few days, the 19th at 9 p.m. Pacific, midnight Eastern, to subscribe. And once it's gone, it's gone. So that's how it happens. And you have to wait another month to get the next box. So go to lootcrate.com/giant-size. Team up. Enter code giant size team up to save some money off your new subscription. Go do it now.
You say carpet, and I'm thinking that would have been another way better choice than Speed. Carpet from Aladdin. Come on.
Oh, look at you. Yeah.
That's how you get out of the Cave of Wonders, man. Come on.
It is indeed.
Home in the world.
Two different songs.
I know it's going to be at the top of the show.
Dude. But think about it. If Nicolas Cage had been the genie instead of Robin Williams. You got 3 wishes, man. And one of them can't be for more wishes. Anyway, that's my horrible Luke Cage. Or
yeah,
Luke Cage.
Who Nicolas was Cage. That sounded more like...
I don't know.
I don't even know. It sounded a little bit like Bernie Mac or something.
I want to take Jafar's face off.
All right, talking about face off, Zack Snyder reveals Justice League's tactical batsuit. I believe Klotz, you have another thing to say about this.
Well, Chris said it first, but I completely agree. Chris, you want to take this?
It looks like Night Owl from from The Watchmen.
He
looked like a Night Owl.
Yeah, and I mean, I don't want to be that guy because I'm the guy that said that Doomsday looked like a friggin' cave troll, but...
Okay,
I said the same thing, dude.
And Ivan Ooves looking Apocalypse before that, I mean... And that, not that he had anything to do with it, but I don't want to get known as the guy that's just poo-pooing everything that comes out, but that straight up looks like Night Owl.
But that's totally what you do, and that's who you are, so, you know, own it. This is the first I waited to look at to where on the show. Now, the very top picture of this article, doesn't look that different than any other Batman. I mean, he's a little more scowly. You see his eye lines on the side and stuff, and it's fine. But then you scroll down and you see the I'm so cool, my future's so bright, I got to have shades Batman. And it totally does look like Night Owl, every Night Owl iteration that I've seen from the Watchmen. That's except he's got a lot of abs, man. His abs are square, apparently, and his pecs are triangles. You know?
That picture at the top of the article, it almost looks Vanta black a couple times. You guys, that new black that they created in the lab.
I haven't heard about this.
If you Google Vanta black, V-A-N-T-A black, and it looks like somebody took Microsoft Paint and just painted something black, and it looks, wherever it's at, it looks out of place, and part of his mask looks like that. It's crazy. Sorry.
Holy cow, that's sick. That's in real life too.
Listeners at home, make sure you're doing this. This is beep, turn the page and do it.
I remember those stories. I it could be okay. I mean, I hope the whole movie isn't those shades, because look, in this, holy cow, in this article, they actually show Owlman.
Night Owl.
Badger Man, whatever.
Because he don't give up.
Yeah, I really don't. But, dude, okay, honestly, though, Night Owl's costume looks way better in Batman's, in that iteration. See, here, the sunglasses work for me. Typically, I don't like a mask to fully cover somebody's face. I don't know why. It's just a thing I have. But Night Owl works. Batman, I'm like, lose the sunglasses, Batman. It's obviously dark. You know, you can cut that out.
Yeah. I mean, aren't Zack Snyder films dark enough?
Dark? Yeah.
I like how Nolan did the Dark Knight trilogy and Zack Snyder just did the Dark Knight career.
Yeah.
Like all of them, every single movie.
You don't know from dark. Yeah.
So, I hate analyzing something on a single shot. Yeah. And that's all we have here. I got to say, I'd like to see it in action. I would like to see, because, you know, like with Tony Stark. And again, that's a suit that does not bother me, that it totally obscures his face. But they show inside the suit from the computer side. So you see all the computer stuff on his face, like you're Jarvis looking at him. If they showed me not that, I don't want to see his eyeballs with all the stuff over, although that could be kind of interesting. I want to see from his view and show me what those goggles are doing. Then it might be okay.
Sure, they will. One of the articles I read said that it is for a very special purpose while he pilots a very special new vehicle.
I could see that.
I have no idea what that means. It might mean, I think it probably means he's going underwater, you know, because Aquaman's in the movie. So I would guess that it's an underwater type thing.
That's speciesist. You know he can walk on land. Just saying.
When he comes with a king's tide. Which, to be fair, is one of my favorite parts of the trailer. I'm not mocking that. Because when he says that, you know, oh, he brings fish on the king's tide, I was like, ooh, that just gave me a Game of Thrones like thing. Like, ooh.
Okay, I'm going to say it because I want to. Mike, probably edit this. Better king's tide than a queen's flow. I said it. It's out there. I apologize. But sometimes you got to grab the low-hanging fruit.
All right. You know what? On that note, let's take a break. We got to pay some bills. So please listen to our awesome sponsors here for just a second. We're going to be back. We saved some of the best for last. So come on back in just a minute. And here we go. We're back. Now, it's interesting. I actually found this article, a different version of this article, on my own. And then you guys brought it in. So it's rare that all of us tagged the same exact article. And this is the X-Men Apocalypse Stingers actually setting up Wolverine 3. And Chris, you haven't talked a whole lot. Why don't you take this one?
Talked quite a bit.
Shut up and read the article.
Oh, my goodness. All right, so it's probably not a huge shock, but Simon Kinberg and Brian Singer's audio commentary. We'll just call it Automary from now on.
I like that new word, Automary.
Okay. On X-Men Apocalypse seems to confirm that Mr. Sinister will be the villain in the third Wolverine movie. X-Men Apocalypse's post-credit sequence was pretty obviously about Wolverine, since it showed a man packing a vial labeled Weapon X into a suitcase with Essex Corp stamped on it. And since Mr. Sinister's other name is Nathaniel Essex, it's pretty clear that the villain would be showing up in one of the upcoming movies.
Yeah. Now, the one I read actually went on to say, and I don't have it from me because I thought this was going to be a very similar article. And so the one I read actually had a different reference where they said it could also, it had reason, it showed reason to believe that they could also be setting up the female Wolverine.
Yeah.
X-23 to take over the mantle, mm-hmm. which is, because that mantle has to be passed soon.
I think that is more than likely what's going to happen, since in the comics that's what's happened.
Yep.
Is the mantle's been passed on. And she is the new Wolverine. So,
and I'll tell you, there's only one person. I don't care what up and comers out there. I don't care what person I'm not thinking of right now. But River Tam is the only choice for X-23 for me.
That's not going to happen. There's no way that happens. She's too old.
No, why? Why? You don't know how age progressed she is.
Because if they want,
and a Wolverine is timeless.
Whoa,
my friend.
No, Chris. Let's think logically here. We want to make a number of films. What's going to happen 6, 7? Are we going to get a Hugh Jackman run out of her? Because we want the potential, right?
She's right. Younger now than Jackman was when he took over that role.
But men and women age differently, very drastically. So, all right, let's be real here. I mean, look at how much she's changed since Firefly to now. It's noticeable, and not bad. I'm not saying that. She's beautiful. She's always been beautiful, but she looks like a much more mature woman now than she did when she did Firefly. So, yeah, no, I don't think that that's the direction at all.
Why do you constantly take from me, Paul? When you take and you take and you never give, and it hurts.
Well, it's like people clamoring for Nathan Fillion to get cast in some of these roles, too. It's like it's not going to happen.
It needs to happen.
I mean,
you know what, though? I'm going to have to kind of disagree. I'm looking at a picture of 2016 of River Tam. And well, yes, she has changed since, or Silver Cloud.
First of all, her name is Silver Cloud, not River Tam.
Yeah, somebody said River Tam.
I said it.
Yeah.
Okay.
She's changed a lot. Like, it's noticeable.
But I think she still has a lot of years, but not so much that if she showed up as River Tam now, I'd be like, oh, yeah, that's perfect. I don't know. I think she could do
it. Good. Well, the thing is, the character, though, is supposed to be very young.
That I don't know. See, I don't know much. I know some about it.
Well,
I don't know her.
She's essentially a fresh clone, and she's always characterized as being
a teenager.
A teenager, both physically and mentally. Yep. It's a huge part of the character.
So we were saying that Melissa McCarthy could really pull this off.
Oh my god.
This is gonna be Klotz's favorite moment of the episode, I gotta tell you right now. Dude, who's the chick that's in Badass?
The woman?
The girl. There's a girl.
You mean Kick-Ass?
Is it Kick-Ass?
Was Hit Girl? Kick-Ass, sorry. Chloe Grace Moretz?
Meretz.
I'm going to look at
M-O-E-R-T-Z. I can never remember how to pronounce it.
It's fine. Because I know she's in a new movie, the fifth wave, fourth wave, or whatever. I think that's her. That's
yeah,
her.
She has a promising career right now, but she's not the right pick for X-23. Especially because she was Hit Girl too. I mean, that's
well, I think Hit Girl kind of qualify her to do it.
Yeah.
But that's not how Hollywood looks at stuff like that. They're going to feel like there's too much association. There's too much similar.
Yeah. They didn't do that with Captain America. Mm. You know.
you're not wrong.
And she's a hometown girl. Apparently, she's from Atlanta, Georgia. Mm-hmm. So that means absolutely nothing. But you know, as a thought, throw it out there.
You don't get to throw around that hometown pride when you're on this show with us instead of at one of two active movie sets doing what you're supposed to be doing.
They're not hiring me. What can I say?
They don't have to hire you to go take pictures with your camera.
Yeah, seriously. Get a selfie stick and get us some snaps, man.
This friggin' guy.
Right?
I actually know people. I know people who are on Spider-Man right now. So just not me. But so what do you guys think about Mr. Sinister coming in as possible, the big bad in Wolverine 3?
I think it's cool as long as they do it right. I think that's what they were obviously hinting at, and I did expect it for the Wolverine film, not for the next X-Men film.
Yep.
Though, that being said, with Apocalypse seemingly – I just answered my own question. I guess that pretty much confirms that the next X film is probably going to deal with Dark Phoenix Saga. Mm-hmm. It's almost guaranteed at this point, I guess. So we get to take another ride on that tired old buggy.
If you can I tell you guys a secret? Can I share a little?
No.
Don't tell my wife, but my son's middle name is Essex. And when I threw that out there, I was like, yeah, it's a cool sounding name. You know, nobody else has that name. There's only one reason that name was in my Rolodex.
That's beautiful,
you know,
man.
What would be amazing is if right now we just heard violent like hits, like you watch.
Yeah. No, absolutely. I tried to get my son's middle name, my firstborn son's middle name, to be Frank, or actually Castle. I wanted Castle because one is cool, but two, Frank Castle, Punisher. Just for shits and giggles, because my wife was saying no to everything, I threw out Thor just to piss her off as his middle name. But my daughter, for multiple reasons, but I got James worked in because of James Hetfield. And so her middle name is James, and that worked out. My other daughter, one of her middle names is... Oh, I got to think for a second because I blanked on all my kids' names right now. So wow.
Charles.
Yeah.
You know that you know that James Hetfield's not a part of Iron Maiden, right?
Shut the F up, asswipe. You know what? That's the last time I try to actually just tell you guys something in freaking confidence.
And I can't wait for you to go to your next Alice Cooper concert and be really disappointed when Eddie doesn't show up.
I don't go to Alice Cooper.
Where's Eddie?
Charles recently thought that the new Iron Maiden game that's out with Eddie in it was an Alice Cooper reference and not an Iron Maiden reference.
I told you that
I would get you for that, and Chris set it up perfectly, and now we're twisting in the public eye.
My other daughter's middle name, My other daughter's middle name is Oswin, after Oswin Oswald on Doctor Who. So there you go. I actually got that one in.
You're a nerd.
I am indeed. But as far as the music stuff, you know what? Screw you guys. That's what I got to say. You know, I'm working on five things at once. Somebody asked me what game I was going to talk about. I said, oh, I got this game on deck. And I just threw it out. And then instantly, Ibbot, Klotz, you're all up my behind about it. It's like, you know what?
I believe the words I used were that I was effing disgusted.
Yes.
Charles, you're a few years older than me. That should not be a reference that slips your grip.
I'm a preacher's kid. I was sheltered until I was like 18 years old.
Which means you should have been rocking the Iron Maiden shirts as soon as you got out of the house, right? Isn't that the toolkit? The preacher.
That's like foster kids. Here, get out of the program. Here's $5 and a WIC card, food stamps card.
Literally walks out of their house to go for the first time. They're handed a box with a Metallica CD and an Iron Maiden shirt, right? Every single one of them.
Mine must have been shorted because my whole experience growing up with Iron Maiden was Bill and Ted's Excellent Journey. We're like, throw in the Iron Maiden, excellent. Blah, 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 blah. That was it. So I've done a lot of catching up. Somehow I got Metallica in there. You know, my rebellion years, I got to own Metallica CDs. But beyond that, no, I did not get my standard issue Iron Maiden shirt. So, you know, be kind, rewind. That's all I'm saying. All right. Anything else, guys, before we get out of here? Because I've taken enough beating, I think, on this one. go to facebook.com/breakingthepanel. Man, we are putting out news stories all the time. We are there talking with you. You've got to show up for the conversation. So come be a part of that conversation. Give me a hard time about Iron Maiden. I don't care. I can take it. We'll just be there. Be there. facebook.com/breakingthepanel. Twitter's @panelbreakers. It shares a lot of the same news that we put on our Facebook page, but we definitely monitor that and chat back there. patreon.com/breakingthepanel. We need your help to build this house bigger, better, better, and more. We've got a lot of plans for the future. We can't get there without you. So go to patreon.com/breakingthepanel. There's a lot of great rewards and prizes you can take part in. And Klotz and Wisdom are going to go restructure that. So you're going to get even cooler things to happen there as well. By the way, you guys, Wisdom might not have read, but Klotz, did you see that Patreon now partners with Discord and we can give actual levels of Discord to people for rewards?
Ooh.
Yeah, we're implementing that over on Pokemon Go podcast, and that's something that you guys can put in because Discord chats, that's all the rage with these kids these days.
You know, pretty much.
So Yeah. All right. Of course, we're in iTunes. Give us a rating in iTunes and GiantSizeTeamUp.com. I don't think I missed anything else. So, Chris, you want to have the last word?
I do.
Too bad.
After Charles has said that, you know, 7 years of binging on Bones, I have no doubt that he can take it.
Oh! Till next week when we have Emmett to hopefully save me.
Breaking the Panel is the flagship podcast on the Giant Size Team Up Network. You can support the show at patreon.com/breakingthepanel, and you'll find more of our amazing podcasts at giantsizeteamup.com.